it's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns
know
fans.
Why it's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos, maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Now, back to Steiny and Guru on 95.7 The Game.
All right, Evan Giddings in for Daryl the Guru Johnson, and a lot of 49ers news coming out today. I'll go through it right now, and then we'll get into it. George Kittle is going to miss the next four games. He's on the injured list with a hamstring. Brock Purdy is questionable for Sunday with a toe and a shoulder injury. Jake Moody, the kicker, has been waived. They're going to bring kickers in this week, obviously, and figure it out for Sunday's game against the Saints. Juwan Jennings, no update on him, but the word late yesterday was it might not be serious or as serious as once initially thought. So that's what's going on with the San Francisco 49ers, and they head to New Orleans on Sunday, and they're going to be playing without George Kittle. And we'll find out, Evan, about Purdy and about Jennings. But how do you handle the Purdy situation if he's not quite feeling right?
I mean, I still think he gives you your best chance to win if he's on the field. So, you know, the toe injury to me is, I think, more concerning. The shoulder wasn't his throwing shoulder. So, but you pointed this out yesterday. One of the things that Brock Purdy quietly does well is evade pressure. And he's able to move the pocket. He can extend the play. I mean, shoot, the jump ball touchdown to Tonjes was created because Brock Purdy extended the play with his legs. If his toe hampers his mobility, I think we're going to see that impact the Niners' offense on Sunday. So I think Purdy's, like the toe injury, the foot, is probably the most concerning thing to me.
Yeah, I don't know how extensive either injury is. What do you think about, I don't know what the right answer is, whether you take into account who the opponent is or not. I tend to, on the surface, just say that shouldn't be a factor. If a guy can play, he should play. If he can't, he can't. But, I mean, the Saints they're not supposed to be very good this year.
They almost beat Arizona, by the way.
They did. All right, we got some lines here that are pretty active, so let's get into it. Let's get to who's been waiting the longest. Bobby in Los Altos is going to start us off. What's up, Bobby? How you doing, man?
Hey, guys. Thanks for taking my call. I want to talk about CMC, and I'm in full agreement with you, Steiny, but before, I'm a little sad that Goo's not here because I'm going to say the most Goo thing ever. We're trailing by the Dodgers by 7 games. And we got 7 games against them in the next 2 weeks. So we could win the division, bro.
Oh, the Giants.
Yeah. So you know, I wouldn't be mad talking about Jung Hoo Lee versus Kyler Murray in 2 weeks, if that's what it comes to. But and then Jake Moody, look, good luck, bro. I always think about, like, Young Wei Koo, to be honest with you. Giddy Gids knows his career in San Diego was a doinking disaster when it started. And I think statistically he's like the most accurate kicker in the league. So, you know, good luck, Jake Moody. But CMC, look, this is what it is. The fact is, you know, when your dad is tall, you're probably going to be tall, right? Because you inherit the genes. And there's something about them Shanahan genes that say, I'm going to destroy and run a running back into the ground. Even if this running back's a generational talent, I'm going to have him on the field for, like, what, 50-plus plays? Make him carry the ball and get tackled 22 times and then, you know, what, have 9 catches? Irresponsible. I don't care if we would have won that. I wouldn't have been mad if you lost to Mike McDonald in Seattle if you're going to help save this guy. Obviously, we don't know what's ever going to make him get hurt or not hurt, but my God, to give him that many carries and that many touches in the first game, irresponsible. There's something wrong with that Shanahan gene. They just don't respect the health of running backs.
You know what, Bobby? Thanks for the call. I don't think a lot of coaches respect the, you know, players and their longevity. I mean, when these guys' careers are so short, I think most coaches feel like they're just commodities, and you gotta use them up as much as possible when they're healthy. And I think Shanahan is pretty old school when it comes to that kind of thing. If guys are going to play, he's going to treat them like they're completely healthy. And if their performance is compromised at all, I think he's like, forget it. Just, I need health. I need a healthy player who can do it all. I can't be limited by any of my shortcomings, or I can't be limited by some injuries by players on a team under the guise of having to protect them.
Well, it's hard to protect someone in football, but to Bobby's point, this isn't just a Kyle thing. This is a Mike thing. Like, this is a Shanahan thing. If you look at the Denver Broncos in the early 2000s, when Mike Shanahan was head coach, you go from Terrell Davis to Olandis Gary to Mike Anderson, back to TD to Clinton Portis, back to Mike Anderson to Tatum. Like, the amount of guys that he ran into the ground every single season when he was in Denver lends you to believe that if Shanahan is of the same school of thought, which I believe he is, you're not going to be able to keep running backs upright. Now, the one positive, and this is the other side of the coin that I am willing to give Shanahan the benefit of the doubt for. You win. Like, if you do this and lose, it's one thing. But Kyle Shanahan, along with his father, have shown that this ideology of running backs into the ground or using guys up, it produces victories. And so Bobby is 100% right that it might be irresponsible to give a guy who just popped up in the injury report on Thursday 31 touches on Sunday. They don't win the football game without Christian McCaffrey touching the ball 31 times.
Probably not.
And if Christian McCaffrey doesn't touch the ball probably 20 to 25 times again this Sunday, I don't know if they're even going to be able to beat the lowly New Orleans Saints. So you're damned if you do, you're damned if you don't. But I think that Kyle Shanahan is of the old school thought, which is, I got to find a way to win football games. And if it's going to cost me a player or two here, well, that's what they signed up for, because this is the NFL.
Yeah. This from the YouTube chat, JFA. This is an NFL thing. Almost every GM and coach run their running backs into the ground because that's their job. They get paid. I wonder if it's like a chicken and the egg thing. The value of running backs has gone down, and maybe it's because they're run into the ground to such a degree that you just need more and more of them, and it's not really an importance of the position as opposed to how many people you just have to cycle through there because it's such an unforgiving position in the NFL. So let's go to Chris is in San Jose. Hey, Chris, what's going on, man?
Hey, how you guys doing? Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I just want to talk about the injuries. Obviously, if the NFL guys are going to get hurt, there's only so much you can do. But with all the analytics, the list of who's injured the most, is anyone in the organization looking at the list and saying, who's trending with the least amount of injuries each year, and what can we adjust to try to get to where they are? I mean, obviously, Kyle's a great coach. He knows what he's doing. The Niners have done great things. But you can make adjustments to what you're doing, which is, I think, why Kyle gets so much hate in the big picture, because he's arrogant. He won't adjust. And it goes all the way down to his building a callous mentality. What I just heard of, if they don't build a callous, their teams might not be as good, and this Kyle produces wins, it's like, yes, the 49ers are competitive. He has no rings. You need to make an adjustment. And he does it with play calling. He does it with clock management. He does it with not knowing the rules in overtime. He does it with injuries. This guy does not make adjustments. Yes, they win games. They don't win Super Bowls. Mike Shanahan has rings. Kyle does not. Make an adjustment.
Thanks, Chris. Appreciate the call. That was Chris in San Carlos.
It's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah, you're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns
know why
fans.
It's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos, maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
No, I appreciate it. Strong call, Chris. Well, I would say to this, so if Kyle Shanahan runs his running backs into the ground the same way his dad did, and his dad, like, if he's, you know, trying to be a spitting image of his father, well, you just said his father has rings. I don't know. It's just like, to me, you are kind of damned if you do, damned if you don't. Like, I know people want head coaches to adjust, but that's kind of what you get when you sign up for a Kyle Shanahan team.
So, what, and these adjustments, I'm always fascinated by.
I think Shanahan is of the belief that if he does things his way, eventually he's going to be able to break through.
No doubt.
And it hasn't happened yet, and I completely understand people's frustration with that. But, you know, again, it's like over the last 8 years, have his teams been the most injured? Close to. I don't know if they are, but the numbers would suggest that they're certainly one of the most injured teams in football. They've also been one of the most successful teams in football. So it's hard to... I really think it's hard for someone like Kyle Shanahan to step out of his own head and say, I'm going to do something different.
Well, I kind of agree, and I'm thinking that Kyle Shanahan's now in his ninth year with the 49ers. They've gone to two Super Bowls, and I'm sure that in his mind, he looks at it as, well, the first 2 years we had no talent, and the 2 years we didn't make the postseason, it was just ridiculous injuries. So my method is proven. I do think there is something to that my method is proven, and it's the way I go about it. And this is one of those things where you hire Kyle Shanahan to be this creative play caller and, you know, a brilliant offensive mind, but this is the way he runs a program. And you can't ask him to deviate from what his core belief is, and that is you got to run the football and you got to build up this callus, whatever that really means, although I think I understand that in theory. And so if you don't like it, I think it's then you can't have Kyle as the coach. If you don't like it, if this is something that has, you know, bothers you, and I'm just talking about like the front office, if they really think that this is a direct result of Kyle Shanahan, well, then it's like, okay, dude, you got to change
or maybe
we have to make a decision.
Well, or it's something that they're okay with living with because he's winning games. And that's what, you know, in the NFL, if you don't win, you're not going to have a job. And so I, like, all right, let's take Christian McCaffrey. And is the long-term health of McCaffrey more important than perhaps one game? Yeah, but I don't think you can look at a 17-game season in the NFL like that. What we talked about it going into week one. What's the reason why you love football? Because every single weekend is the Super Bowl. Every single Sunday, it's the most important game on planet Earth. I think that's how these coaching staffs look at it also. Like, they're not looking at it like, well, I got to make sure McCaffrey's, you know, if he pushes it here, you know, I'm not going to have him for a couple weeks. Or, you know, it. We love the NFL because they don't coach like the NBA. They don't sit guys. You don't load manage players. It's one of the reasons we hate watching basketball sometimes, because I don't know who's going to be in the starting lineup. The MLB, same deal. Each game is not as important because you got 162 of them. So you got to think about how you're going to spread your bullpen out, if you're going to stretch a guy, if you're going to push a guy, if a guy really needs to play this much. In the NFL, that does not happen. You are on the field, you are 100% healthy, or you are sitting. And the Niners have had to deal with, I think, both the good and the bad in that.
You're listening to 95.7 The Game, KGMZ FM and HD1 San Francisco, an Odyssey sports station. Always live on the free Odyssey app and now broadcasting from the Laughing Monk Studios. Laughing Monk, righteously brewed in San Francisco. Let's go out to Chris in San Jose. What's up, Chris? How you doing?
Good morning, gentlemen. Thank you very much.
Sure.
The 49ers offense is what it was last year. It is chaos. if you look at CMC, when he runs the ball, he's not, you can't tackle him with one person. He's hit and tackled by three defenders every time he touches the ball. He's an old salt in the running back parlance. He's an old salt with a history of injuries. The last thing you want to do is give him the ball that many times. Kittle, he also gets hit. You can't tackle him with one player. Three guys can bring him down, and that's, he gets a lot of punishment. So if you take a chart and put red dots where the injuries occur, it's the middle of their offense. Pearsall gets his balls right by the sidelines because he has a small frame. He catches it and steps out of bounds. That's cute, but you're not going to go far not allowing him to go across the middle, and your quarterback cannot throw deep. So you're handicapped. Short passes, between the hash marks. Your receivers and your players and offense are going to get tattooed, and that's what's happening. It's cute when they run on the field. They look like basketball players. Look at the wide receivers. His offensive scheme requires small players who are fast. When it all works, it's good, but you pay a price for that cute, cute offense that he runs. Your players are getting wiped out, period.
Thanks, Chris. Appreciate the call.
Would he not consider that 45-yard dot to Ricky Pearsall a deep pass?
Well, that's the first one I thought of, and he did catch a ball over the middle.
Yeah, he caught a 26-yard in route on the first drive on a 3rd and 8 over the middle.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm just curious.
I will say this, and so I was watching the game Sunday with a couple buddies, and it was about, I think it was early third quarter. I remember saying, you know, I will say this. This offense doesn't look explosive or dynamic. Like, I didn't think it looked pretty vanilla the first half and for most of the second half. Like, that's the one thing I feel like not having Debo out there, and I probably remember Debo from 3 years ago, not last year, but that offense didn't scare me with big plays. And I know they made one when they had to, but I just thought that, you know, their offense was just so-so on Sunday.
I think it changed when George Kittle went out. I mean, that first drive, they walked right down the field. And then Kittle got hurt, and a lot changed. I mean, I also think that this team is not... I think that they're going to have trouble running the football, not just even when Kittle was in. I mean, McCaffrey was, I think, 22 for 69 yards. You know, 3.3 a pop. Even Brian Robinson was less than 4 yards a carry. I mean, they didn't run the ball very well against the Seattle Seahawks. So I think this is a team that's going to be predicated on how well they can run the ball. And they didn't do it well on Sunday, which is probably why their offense didn't look very efficient.
Yeah. 888-957-9570 is the number. Coming up in 25 minutes, we have NFL Odyssey insider Ross Tucker. He's joining us every other Tuesday. And we'll talk a lot of Niners with him. Let's go to Steph in Concord. What's up, Steph? How you doing?
Hey, guys. How you doing? Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
What I want to know that I don't see anybody talking is the strength and conditioning coach and staff. Because their job is to not only predict a player's tendency for injuries, but to correct that. And, you know, we're always injured. Shanahan, any coach. I mean, that's part of football. I get it. But I think there's got to be some blame there.
Yeah, I think that's the way some 49er fans feel. I just don't know what you do about it. And knowing for sure that you're – you know why it's happening, and injuries are tough to predict. I do feel like, and maybe it's just the sport, but like in basketball, Celebrini, it feels like, oh, he has a perfect sense of, he knows exactly when to rest a guy, exactly when a guy should come. You know what I mean? It's just kind of built in with Celebrini that everybody kind of thinks that he can manage this stuff perfectly. And it's like, okay, why don't the Niners have a guy who can say, no, Purdy should probably sit this week You know what I mean? I just feel like Celebrini, and I'm sure the Niners have their guys, but it just feels like Celebrini's considered the expert.
It's because they're two different sports.
Yeah.
Okay, so let's say Brock Purdy sits this week against the Saints because you just want to be careful, right? That's the equivalent of like 7 basketball games. So when Steph Curry sits one night on the tail end of a back-to-back, that's completely different than Brock Purdy sitting one game in the NFL. If you lose that game, that might be the difference between you making the playoffs and not. Whereas the Warriors and a lot of NBA teams feel like a player missing one game, or maybe, you know, 10 back-to-backs over the course of a year, that's not going to cost you as much. I mean, that's the reason why they do it. But like, we never say in the NFL, well, you got to think about sitting him because he's questionable. No, like if he's healthy, he's going to be on the field. That's just the NFL.
Yeah, I mean, but we have no idea the extent of any of these injuries, and we never have an idea of who's playing through what and who's healthier than someone else. And so whenever it comes to, oh, what should we do with Purdy this week? It's like, I don't know. Like, we don't know the extent of it. To me, it's pretty simple. If he's not 100% and you're worried that he could do more damage to it, sit him. If he looks like he's 100% and he says he feels good, and then he plays.
But this is the thing. It's like by maybe even after week one, like no one's 100%.
Well, yeah, and each...
Brock Purdy, his first season as starting quarterback when he had to come in the middle of the year, won in Seattle, a place, by the way, he has not lost after Sunday. He won in Seattle the week after he broke a rib against the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, which was his first career start in the NFL. So from the start, Brock Purdy has demonstrated that he can play through pain and still help you win games.
Right. But the player decides what he can what he can play through or not. And what I'm saying is if Brock Purdy thinks he can play through the toe, forget about the shoulder for now, and the doctor clears it, then he's going to play. If Brock Purdy's like, no, something's really, first of all, it hurts, I don't have the mobility, I can't cut, you know, then you don't play him. But I do think Purdy makes that decision. And what I mean is that, you know, everybody's got their threshold. And I think Purdy's pretty tough. There's no doubt about it. I think most of these guys are pretty tough. And they decide what's just, in, you know, something they can play through and what they can. And different guys have different thresholds.
I mean, I don't know for sure, but I don't think it's a situation where they decide if they play. Like, they practice during the week, and if they're not, if they're going to be a hindrance to their team, the medical staff will identify that and say, you're not playing this week. Like, Juwan Jennings on Sunday, I think it was Barrows that was talking about this, but like Juwan Jennings was trying to catch footballs on the sideline in Seattle, but he couldn't raise his arm. So could he catch a ball below the belt or around his chest? Sure. But you need 100% mobility as a flexibility, like range of motion as a wide receiver to catch a football. If you can't do that, you can't help your team. And so Juwan Jennings didn't go back into the game. Like, that's where, yeah, did Juwan want to go back in? Sure. But you're physically not fit enough to play.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know what the injuries are, but if they were saying that Jennings couldn't lift his arm over his shoulder, then he can't play, obviously. I just think it sounds to me like with Purdy, it's going to be more of a gray area than that. And it's going to be, he might not be 100%, but he's going to still be, he's not fully limited. And that this is where you think if 90% of Purdy's better than 100% of Mac Jones, and if you don't think he can injure it any further, you know, I mean, I think teams make this decision all the time. And it depends on what a guy's pain threshold is. But I think Purdy's going to play Sunday. Why? I don't know. Because I don't a toe to keep a guy out. I think he can battle through that.
I mean, I'm also of the belief that a less than 100% Brock Purdy is better than a 100% Mac Jones.
Yeah, and you got to kind of measure that too. for sure. 888-957-9570 is the number. Coming up in 20 minutes, Ross Tucker, Odyssey NFL Insider. He's going to be joining us every other week during the football season. Love talking to Ross. And he's going to be joining us at 11:30. Once again, the news of the day, George Kittle on the injured list. He's going to miss 4 games. Brock Purdy, toe and shoulder injury. He's questionable for Sunday. Jake Moody has been waived. And Juwan Jennings' status, still unclear heading into Sunday's game. 888-957-9570 is the number. How do 49er fans rationalize or think about all these injuries that seem to happen on a consistent basis? 888-957-9570. That segment brought to you by LifeSource Water Systems. For a little, because I have to.
It's actually 148.
What did he say, two?
Nah, is it 145? But...
49ers, I'm not going to say it. Jake Moody in a shambles. They waived Jake Moody today. George Kittle's going to be out 4 games, and Brock Purdy's got a toe and a shoulder injury. We'll see about his status for Sunday. Evan, Ross Tucker joining us in 10 minutes. Also, we're going to effort Ross on the YouTube video chat, see if he'll pop up on there. What are you laughing at?
Well, it's just for the first time, you'll be able to see him face-to-face, I believe, since the Super Bowl, because he popped by our spot in 2023 in Vegas, which was a lot of fun to meet him actually in person. And it'll be the first time that he will have seen you in a couple of years as well. So I'm sure he's really looking forward to that.
Yeah, I would believe so. And he'll, of course, be coming courtesy of the River Islands guest line right here on 95.7.
Now, are you putting your new glasses on because Ross is joining us in 20 minutes and you want to put on a good face?
No, I'll take these off and put them on 6 more times before he even joins us.
Is that because now you can't move the mic up and down and you need something else to fidget with? Dude, yeah. I can get you a fidget spinner. You know what those are?
They don't really help. I end up just picking it up and putting it down and still messing around.
Well, it's better than the mic or the glasses or any of the other appliances that you need to do the show.
No doubt. Kyle Shanahan talked yesterday in a conference call. Let's go through some of the, at least the injury stuff, and then we'll talk about the prospects against the Saints. This is just from the beginning of the press conference. Kyle listing what's going on.
All right, guys. Injuries from the game. Ben Bartsch had a mild knee sprain. He'll be day-to-day. Juwan Jennings with his shoulder, we're still evaluating, waiting for the information to come back. George Kittle did have a hamstring. He's going to be out a few weeks. Brock Purdy hurt his left shoulder and toe. We'll see how this week goes for him. And that's it from the game.
All right. And here's a quick follow-up.
One of those two Purdy injuries more severe than the other, and he in risk of missing a start or two?
I'd probably say the toe's worse than the shoulder.
And what about his availability this week?
Yeah, we're not sure. We got to see how it heals and how the week goes on it.
All right, so that was Kyle Shanahan yesterday, just to give you some updates on the injuries and whether Brock Purdy plays or not against the New Orleans Saints. George Kittle won't be playing, and we'll find out about Purdy. And Mac Jones is the backup. It's as simple as that.
Were you surprised to hear that Brock Purdy was injured after that game?
I was, yeah. And I certainly was a little surprised that it was a toe injury because, like I, you know, I thought he was very elusive on Sunday against the Seahawks. And if now that's the part that you would have to take into account, I think, if you're Shanahan, and it's his escapability and it's his elusiveness. And if he doesn't have that, you know, if he doesn't have that quick burst that he uses to avoid, because he can't plant or whatever, then I think you don't play him. He's got to be mobile enough to play, because if he's not, then it's not just the toe injury you're worried about. Then I'd be worried about him getting hit because he can't escape like he always has. That's what it would come down to. I'm going to assume the shoulder's fine and he can throw, But if he's limited in his mobility, that would be a problem.
I mean, I think that mobility is an underrated aspect of his game. I think that Brock Purdy is more mobile than people give him credit for. And I know he's not taken off like even the way Mahomes does sometimes, where it looks like he's running in slow motion, but he still just knows when and where to kind of dive. Like, I mean, Sam Darnold had a couple of runs for the Seahawks, and I look at him like a mobile quarterback, but if Sam Darnold can't move, he's a statue back there. And the one thing that you can't have, like, in 2025, it feels like if you look around the NFL, there are very few statues. And the only one that came to mind who really looked like one in week one was Jared Goff. And he just got teed off on by the Green Bay Packers. But you can't have a guy, even Aaron Rodgers at age 41, 42, can move a little bit. And so if Brock Purdy is, yes, I agree, if he is unable to, you know, kind of scoot or just evade pressure the way he was against Seattle, then that is something you have to consider sitting him down for. Although, I don't know if Mac Jones is exactly an elusive quarterback, but, you know, maybe he gives you a better chance with his arm.
This is more Kyle Shanahan on Brock Purdy.
The one he threw it, I think it was when he just overthrew Ricky a little bit to the left and went into the ground on it.
That's the shoulder, I believe. I should have given some context to that.
Well, that's not one I would be worried about as much. But, I mean, he's going to have to play through pain.
Well, unless he injured his shoulder after the throw to Pearsall, I don't think there's anything to worry about. Because if you're telling me he had a shoulder issue while he threw, or when he was throwing that ball to Pearsall in the fourth quarter, you know, I wouldn't worry too much about that.
No. He was saying it was on an earlier throw.
Yeah. So he did. I thought he was. I don't think his accuracy was off.
No, it also Sunday's didn't game. Look like his legs were that big of a factor.
Right?
I mean, he still rolled out and got the ball to Tonjes when he needed to.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, he looked healthy on the last play, to me anyway. Now the 49ers, they play the New Orleans Saints, and we're talking about what you were encouraged by and maybe what the challenges are for this team right now. And the 49ers are going to have to make a decision on Purdy. They're going to be without Kittle. And I guess the problem with Kittle is, that he doesn't just help your passing game, he helps your running game. And that's the guy who a lot of, like when you list the players that the 49ers can't play without, it feels like McCaffrey's one and George Kittle might be two, even ahead of Purdy, just because he allows the 49ers to kind of play the way they want to play, regardless of the play call.
Does Trent Williams play on Sunday? Is that where you come at in terms of the hierarchy, that like Kittle has now replaced Trent Williams in terms of importance? Because I think Trent missed one snap, maybe a couple, but he did not have a good game.
No.
I mean, he gave up six pressures, which was the most since he joined the 49ers. And
18.
I don't know. I mean, maybe it's because he didn't practice much. Obviously, didn't play in preseason, joint practices, stuff like that. But if Trent Williams has taken a step back, it's maybe understandable. Like, do you think that George Kittle is more important than your left tackle?
Well, I mean, Trent Williams wasn't good on Sunday, and a bunch of people brought that up. But I mean, and I know I give the guy a lot of grief, but you got to obviously let him play through it. And he's one of those players that probably uses the early season to, you know, get into shape. So Kittle being out four games, I would say, is more concerning than Trent Williams' start to the season. Now, if in 3 or 4 weeks, Trent Williams still looks like he did in game one, and Kittle's coming back in a week or two, then Trent Williams supplants him as a bigger worry. But right now, no, it's how do you survive the next four games without George Kittle?
Well, and it's just, but it's another guy that fits into, the 49ers are in survival mode for the first quarter of the year, because it's not just George Kittle. Juwan Jennings might be out, and he was already dealing with stuff in the preseason. DeMarcus Robinson is out because of his off-the-field transgressions. Jordan Watkins, your rookie, is hurt. Like, you just don't have a ton of guys who can catch the ball now. And so you brought this up last segment that, you know, the Niners offense looked kind of mediocre at times during that game, and I agree, but we kind of knew that Brock Purdy wasn't going to have many options to throw the ball to in the first place, and now he maybe lost his best pass catcher in George Kittle for another month. So this first 4 weeks of the football season, it's survival time for the 49ers, and that's why, as much as I get that they did not look great and they could have lost that football game, you cannot complain about wins at a portion of the season in which you're not near full strength. And Kyle, yes, guys are going to go down when Kyle Shanahan is head coach, but you're also supposed to get some of these guys back. And so if you can weather this early storm, you beat Seattle, you won a rivalry game, you won a division game, maybe you're able to go 500 the first 4 weeks, or the first, you know, you can go 3-2 the first 5 weeks.
Right.
Then you look at the guys that are coming back, and you might be thinking that this team actually...
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Actually has something.
Well, the way I look at it, if I'm the San Francisco 49ers heading in to the New Orleans game, and I know that I'm going to be missing some weapons, I mean, shouldn't 49er fans prepare themselves? And you called it survival mode. I'll just say, shouldn't we prepare ourselves for, you know, 2 or 3 weeks of ugly football, if that's what you want to call it? They're going to need to rely on their defense probably earlier in the season than they wanted. They legitimately have good players on, you know, who are injured. This is where I get it. It's no excuses, next man up. But the next man up's not as good as the guy who was up. And so I do think it's unrealistic to think that this team's going to, you know, score a lot of points the first 3 or 4 weeks of the season without Kittle, without Ayuk, without DeMarcus Robinson even, and maybe without Juwan Jennings. I mean, you know, like, I hate to say it, but the way I look at it, you're going down to New Orleans, you could be missing all those players. It's like, just go get a win. I don't care if you win 10-9, even if it's the Saints, because you're hurt right now.
Exactly. So that's why it's like, I don't care that they won ugly. I don't care that Jake Ton just caught a jump ball, or that Reek Woolen should have picked that ball off to Ricky Pearsall, or that Sam Darnold was knocking on the door of beating you. It doesn't matter. You won the game. Like, that's what you have to do right now. And this is already a Niners team that we thought coming into the season did not have nearly as much talent as teams in the past. So one of your big boys in George Kittle goes down. Like, I don't care how you beat the Saints. You know, if we come in on Monday and I mean, I got to be honest. I know you guys were sitting here yesterday. I was behind the glass. But, like, listening to the amount of people that were pissed off about the win yesterday, maybe pissed off is too strong, but certainly feeling not very happy. Like, I was shocked. This team is not at full strength. And you're right, no excuses, next guy up. But it also means that I'm not going to complain when you win a football game if you're not at your best.
Yeah. Well, not only that, they're coming off a 6-11 season. All right, let's get to it. All guests on 95.7 The Game appear on the River Island. River Island's guest line is in a time you discovered the islands. And on the line is Odyssey NFL insider Ross Tucker. Insider calls are brought to you by Nationwide for your insurance and financial needs. Nationwide is on your side. Let's welcome in NFL Odyssey insider Ross Tucker. What's up, Ross? How you doing?
I am doing fantastic. Good to hear you guys. Good to see you. I mean, what is it? I thought we were doing radio. Now I'm doing video if I can.
Yeah, you don't look bad. You don't look bad.
I don't look good. I don't look good either.
You're still hanging in there.
I'm trying. I'm trying.
Boy, where do you want? We'll start with the Niners, and then we'll do a little branching off. George Kittle's going to miss. I'll just give you all the news, and you probably know it, but Jake Moody's been waived, the kicker. George Kittle's going to miss 4 weeks. Juwan Jennings' status unknown, and Purdy's status for Sunday is also unknown, but they do have the Saints in New Orleans. Just your impressions of the Niners' week one win, and yet coming out with some guys who are banged up.
So I got a few things for you. Number one, because I called the game for CBS on Sunday, I can tell you that I think that the Saints are a little bit better than people realize. Mm. So that's not like the walk in the park that maybe some people would have thought it would be. The other thing is, I guess I just don't know why it feels like there's always injuries with the Niners. Like, what does Kyle say when people ask him about that? Because I see all these statistics online where they are the most injured team seemingly every year, which is crazy, and it's already started again. I mean, McCaffrey was on the report last week. Thankfully, he was okay. He carried a big load. And now, you know, they got all these other injuries. The Moody thing, don't even get me started. I'll never understand teams that draft kickers really at all, let alone that high. It never works. It's never – I mean, I guess Janikowski, I guess that kind of – wasn't he like a first-round pick? That is like – I'd watch a 30 for 30 on that now looking back on it. That's just amazing. But I was listening to you guys. They got the win. That's all that matters. They're beat up. They got to get this win. And that's all that matters. And then we'll worry about next week.
Yeah.
Well, Ross, you talk about the injuries, and you're right. Like I saw, I think it was Warren Sharp who posted on social media that last year they were number one in terms of games lost due to injury. 2023, they had good fortune, but 2022, they were top 10, 21, top 3, most injured 2020, top 6, 2019, top 4, 2018. I know it's oversimplified to boil it down to one person or one thing, but it does feel like injuries are just synonymous with Kyle Shanahan-led teams. Do you think that they practice harder than other teams? That it's been reported that they're trying to build this callus in training camp. Like it is a thing. And after 8 years, the stats seem kind of undeniable.
Well, the callus in training camp part is interesting. I'm not sure I've ever really bought into that. I don't really believe that. You know, the Eagles do very little in training camp or preseason games, and they've been extremely healthy in recent years. You know, I do think that part of it is how long their season goes. And that's a credit to Kyle and John Lynch and the success they've had, right? I mean, if you have that many years in a row where you're going to conference championship games, Super Bowls, whatever, and they had certainly 2022, 2023, I think you're almost necessarily going to have injuries the following year, especially when you have some guys that have played a lot of football and are a little bit older. Now, you know, we'll see what happens with the Eagles this year, certainly, but the Chiefs have been banged up as well, right? Chiefs have gotten banged up and they've played a lot. It would kind of be weird if you're playing two or three more weeks than all the other teams and you're not more injured than they are the next year, right? I mean, it's like any other overusage injury, but I do feel like, right or wrong, it does feel like the Niners kind of take that to a whole other level.
Ross Tucker joining us on 95.7 The Game, and insider calls are brought to you by Nationwide for your insurance and financial needs. Nationwide is on your side. You know, everybody talks about Kyle as a great play caller, can scheme guys up, whatever that means. And one of the things I remember hearing about Shanahan is, you know, when a quarterback delivers the ball to a receiver, he wants the receiver to be basically at full speed when he catches the ball. I guess maybe he emphasizes that. I mean, could that be part of the reason? Because we're all out here trying to kind of figure it out.
Well, wait, I mean, that's an interesting point. That's like, I was about to tell you that was a stupid question. And then the more I thought about it, it's actually a pretty good one, Steiny. It's one of your better ones.
Thank you.
one of the Kyle Shanahan family, Shanahan offense, one of their greatest strengths, right? One of the secret sauce, if you will. They're as good at run after the catch as there is in the NFL. And they do the best job probably of getting guys space to get yards after they catch it. And now that you think about it, it does feel like we can all think of all these times where Debo or, Kittle or whoever, they are screaming when they catch that pass. And so by the time they catch it and the safety's there, the safety almost like can't help but have a bad angle because the safety's kind of flat-footed in the middle of the field and they're going 22 miles an hour, diagonally or east and west. So I don't think that that's why. Maybe they practice that much, but that's an interesting observation. I mean, listen, if you brought me on here for medical advice,
right,
this is probably going to go really badly. I mean, really, really badly.
Well, Ross, let's get into football then. With George Kittle going to IR and them missing him for at least the next month, how big of a loss is that for the 49ers? And just watching, for example, this weekend on Sunday against the Saints, what do you think fans are going to miss about this offense that he brings?
Well, so I think there's still a very, very, very compelling argument that he's the best tight end in football, right? When you take into account receiving, the year he had last year, and he is a more than willing blocker, which is what I love about him, which is a terrific, terrific trait. And, these other guys they have, I mean, I got to be honest with you guys, I follow things very, very closely. I know every team starters and most of the backups. I never heard of this guy. Tonjes, how do you say his name?
Tonjes,
yeah. I never heard of him till we caught that touchdown, right? So, now listen, maybe he's really good, but you're going to have a drop-off from number one tight end in the NFL to guy I never heard of, right? There's some drop-off there, maybe a lot of drop-off. What that means, right, is that Shanahan necessarily – is going to have to tweak what he does. Maybe Juszczyk gets the ball more, right? Mm. Obviously, they're going to have to lean on Pearsall a lot, especially with us not knowing Jennings' status. Maybe Bourne can hit the ground running. I was already a little bit surprised just how much they utilized McCaffrey on Sunday. Yeah. I think if there's a fair critique of Shanahan, is that he does that. He puts too much on certain players. Like, you traded for Brian Robinson for a reason. You drafted Grendo for a reason. I think a fair critique of Kyle would be, hey, man, why don't you save McCaffrey a little bit more than that so he's there for the whole year? Because you've got other capable guys in Robinson and Grendo. And at this point with no Kittle, they really need McCaffrey for the passing downs. Like, they need him for the passing downs. Some of the other runs, I'd put Robinson or Grendo out there.
Hmm. Ross Tucker joining us on 95.7 The Game. He's our Odyssey NFL insider. Not a great game for Trent Williams. Allowed 6 pressures. He had a holding penalty. He's 37 years old. Where do you think he's at? I know that he often takes early in the season to kind of ramp up, but I mean, where are you with Trent Williams? You know line play as well as anyone.
Yeah, it's interesting. Somebody said, did he have something bothering him or something in the game or no?
I don't think so.
He did come out at one point in the second half, Ross, and then he came right back in.
I'm trying to think about. I saw where online someone said that there was an issue. You guys know who Brandon Thorne is?
No, but I mean, I remember watching the game, and there was they were like Joe Davis and Greg Olsen were talking about Trent Williams having some concerns.
Yeah, so Brandon Thorne is like one of the best O-line, D-line gurus, and he said Trent got rolled up bad midway through the second quarter and was visibly in pain. So yeah, maybe that was a factor. I don't know. He definitely got beat three times, like pretty much clean by the same move by that Mafi guy. Mm-hmm. I'm not there yet to say that he's dropped off, because I also saw videos of him moving really, really well and doing some impressive things in the run game. But that's something to keep an eye on. But they're saying that he got rolled up on. You know what the funny thing about that is? Can I just tell you?
Sure.
Nobody cares.
No, you know I do.
Like, no. If you're inside the white lines, okay, you are saying you're healthy enough to play. There are no excuses. There are no, he's dealing with this or he's dealing with that. Nobody cares. Nobody. I mean, I played five games in 04, including out there in San Francisco with a herniated disc in my back where I had to take like two lower tabs, two flex draws, a shot of Toradol on my butt, couldn't tie my shoelaces. Nobody cared. You know, like after the season, they don't like give you extra credit. This isn't elementary school, okay? Nobody cares, and he needs to perform. If he's going to be out there, then he needs to be better than he was on Sunday.
No doubt. Hey, Ross, good start to the season. Thank you very much for joining us. And, those receivers catch the ball at high speed.
At first I thought it was asinine, and I thought about it and thought, maybe it is the reason for some of these hamstring or soft tissue injuries. I mean, Steiny, don't pat yourself on the back too much. Probably not, but maybe that has some small thing to do with it.
Yeah, one of many reasons. Thanks, Ross. Appreciate it, buddy.
Thanks, Ross.
See you guys.
All right, Ross Tucker, Odyssey NFL Insider.
Strong start, week one.
You know, I don't know what the solution is, but he said it. It's fair to be critical of Kyle Shanahan with these injuries, and obviously, people around the league, it's not just an issue that's limited to just the Bay Area, because Ross is aware of it, and I'm sure a lot of the national guys are. And this is just one of those things that it's going to be frustrating, because we're never really going to be able to find the answer, only that it's happening.
So this is something I am curious about. Like, I know that you look at it on paper, you're like, wow, he touched the ball 31 times. But a lot of it, to me, is just how much they're dependent on him. Like, once Kittle and Juwan go down, there's just not a lot of guys you can throw the ball to.
Right.
And Brock Purdy's ultimate safety blanket is going to be his running back. So that explains why you're dumping him off 9 times for McCaffrey. Now, the running aspect of it, that to me is fair. So, Steiny, they ran it. There was 31 design runs in the game on Sunday. Christian McCaffrey got 22 of them. Brian Robinson got 9 of them. So McCaffrey received 70% of the design runs. Do we need that to be 50? You know, would you like it to be 60? Would you like it to be less than 50? My point is, if you're running the ball 35 times, 22 of those to the RB1 is, I don't look at that as a ridiculous amount. You know, if anything, they probably should have tried to throw the ball a bit more, but Brock Purdy also tossed the ball 35 times, so they were completely even in run versus pass. Like, I do think that some of that is just simply in-game. What do we need to do to get the victory? Like, if Christian McCaffrey only ran the ball 18 times, or if he only had 5 catches or 6 as opposed to 9, that I don't know if they win that game. Like, when Christian McCaffrey was on the field, and I know that Brian Robinson Jr. is a good running back, and that's why you traded for him. But to me, it was such a stark contrast between when 23 was in and when I had to watch Robinson Jr. Like, he's not picking up extra yards after contact. He's not stretching a 1 yard gain into 3 or 4. He's not taking a little dump off 25 yards up the field. So I understand that people are concerned and the eye is open about McCaffrey's workload, but they need him Like, they need him maybe more than any team needs their running back.
Yeah, and I'm there's another thing I'm thinking about which might have made week one a little bit of an outlier. And I know that Kyle Shanahan places a great deal of emphasis on time of possession. They're not going to have a lot of games this year where the Niners have more time of possession than 38 minutes. So they had the ball 38 minutes to the Seahawks 22 minutes. That's one of the reasons why the carries and the offensive, they had a lot of, they had so many more offensive plays than the Seahawks. So that was a reason why, and they were having success when they did that. And so that's why McCaffrey got 31 touches. But, you know, if it's 32 to 28, then that means you're not going to have as many plays, and McCaffrey will probably get the ball less.
Well, it also comes down to when do you need to go get points. Like, I'm looking at the drive, the drive list right now. So on the drive right before the half, the one where they were trying to get a field goal and Jake Moody missed. So you're looking at a total of 11 plays. McCaffrey touched it 5 times in those 11 plays. 3 on the ground, 2 through the air. That's a money drive, and you don't have George Kittle.
That's the opening drive or the game-winning drive?
No, that's the last drive of the first half.
Gotcha. Oh, okay.
You're trying to go get points. It's a two-minute drill. You got to get points. Who's the ball going to? Your best player, Christian McCaffrey. George Kittle's not out there. Now you fast forward to the final drive. A 6-play drive, primarily because of the 45-yard catch by Pearsall. McCaffrey touched it on 3 of those 6 plays. So that's 8 of his 31 on just 2 drives, because that's where you have to go get points. Like, I do think some of this and the workload is just based purely on the situation and the context of when do we need to score. Christian McCaffrey is our best chance to go get points. And to be fair, they should have got 3 out of that drive right before the half. So if Christian McCaffrey is touching it a lot and you scored 10 points out of the 20 that they would have had, I'm sorry. Like, I'm giving the ball to 23. Because he is my best chance to win.
Yeah, he definitely is. And I do think it was interesting the way they used him on Sunday, because it felt like he was off the field more than he had been in the past, and the play count bears that out. But he was more active when he was on the field and involved in a higher percentage of those plays. So, you know, how do you balance that out? I don't know.
Maybe that's how they try and get away with it. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
When he's on the field, we're going to use him, but he's also going to have more time to rest.
Yeah, exactly. And it, you know, I also think Brian Robinson, somebody who's probably going to have more of a role, you know, as the season goes along, he's new here, so he's got to, you know, figure out what his role is and learn the playbook and all that kind of stuff. But I also believe that, and we talked a lot about it, and you talked about it, we talked a little bit about it before the show, but this is where the schedule also comes in. Okay, so, yeah, you're going to be without Kittle. You might even be without Purdy. We'll see about the other guys. All that being said, you're playing New Orleans this weekend. You're not playing the Eagles. You're not playing the Cowboys. You're not playing the Packers or Lions. You're not even playing the Vikings. So this is where, of course, there's no easy games in the NFL. But this is a game you can win despite all the injuries. And if the 49ers, if Purdy plays and Kittle doesn't and Jennings misses the game but McCaffrey plays and they lose, I don't necessarily think just being without George Kittle and Jennings should get you beat in New Orleans.
Well, it might.
It might.
I mean,
but my point is it
almost got you beat in Seattle, right? If Tonjes doesn't catch a jump ball. Like, I think, for example, if Brock Purdy throws that ball up and instead of Tonjes, it's George Kittle, and Kittle makes the catch, we're not coming here on Monday and saying, oh, that was a 50. Like, that's George Kittle. Ball's up in the air, that's his.
Right.
But it's Jake Tonjes, who Ross Tucker just told us he's never heard of before, and it's this man's job to study all 53 men on all 32 teams. So if he's never heard of him before, like, maybe against the Saints, you don't get that ball and you lose the game. And the difference is George Kittle would have been the one to go get it.
I'm not saying it's a cakewalk, but if you made a list right now of teams you wouldn't want to play or you would play, the Saints are going to be in the top five teams you'd probably want to play in a situation like this. Again, I hear you. It's like you're going to have to go down there and win that game with the players you have. But this is where the schedule can help. You know, where did I write this down? I'm looking at the Rams.
But so are you? You're looking at the Saints like a no excuses, got to win.
Yeah, if you want to win 10 games, you want to make the playoffs. This is one that's got to be put in the win column. And this is why I give the 49ers a chance. Is I'm looking at the Rams. You know, they got Philly, the Ravens, and the Lions. And if the Lions get it together, obviously they're a good team. I mean, this is where the schedule, I'm not saying the schedule means you're great, all those kind of things, but it gives you an opportunity to take advantage of some times when you don't have to play the league's elite teams and your division rivals do. So whenever the Rams, let's say, play Philly, not this weekend, you know, if we're playing the Saints, you know, can we get a win and they get a loss?
Well, yeah, you want to win every single game, but, I mean, do you think the Niners are as good as the Rams?
We'll see.
Well, but just because your record is the same doesn't mean you're as good of a team.
No.
Like they're both 1-0. I think the Rams are a better team.
Well, I think they're pretty comparable, let's say.
You don't think the Rams look better against a much better Houston Texans team?
I'm just saying, yeah, they look better week one. I'll give you that. But what I'm saying is, I don't think the Rams are clear-cut better than the 49ers. I don't think one's a 12-win team and one's a 9-win team.
Well, no, but if the Rams played this schedule...
That's what I mean.
No, but that has nothing to do with how good the team is. That has to do with who's on their schedule.
Right, but it's still going to determine who finishes first and who makes the playoffs.
Yeah, but I'm asking you who's the better team. My point is,
of what?
Who's got the better team, the Rams or the Niners?
I think they're pretty comparable. I'd give the Rams a slight edge right now. I think the Rams are a little bit better, but it kind of doesn't mean anything because it's week one. But I do think they're pretty comparable. I think they're... We'll find fans that think the Rams will win the division, and we'll find fans that think the Niners will.
Yeah, see, I think the Rams are the team that is right now, it's like they're number one in the NFC West. People might fight me on that. But the Niners are, I don't think you can look at any week like a gimme week.
No, you can't. You can't. But what I'm saying...
That's what I'm saying with the Saints. Like, again, we just heard from Ross that's not a bad football team. He just saw them play.
Right. But what I'm saying is, if the 49ers schedule helps them get to 10 wins, then the Rams have to be a 10-win team. And their schedule,
not what I'm arguing.
Well, what I'm saying is, the Rams might be better, but lose more games because they play harder teams.
Yeah, and what I'm saying is that the 49ers cannot look at any opponent on their schedule, whether it's because of weakness or they're down or they're out, as we have to beat that team. Like, they might get upset this week in New Orleans.
They might.
And a big reason is because they're totally banged up.
Right. But that... And they're going to get Jacksonville, and they're going to get Tennessee, and they're going to get the Giants.
I feel like you're looking at this Niners team like they just should win the division,
No, I'm not. No, the way I'm looking at it is this schedule will give them a chance to win more games than if it were a tougher schedule like the Rams. It doesn't mean it's automatic at all. And yes, you got to go down and beat them in New Orleans. I'm just saying, would you rather play New Orleans this weekend or 25 other teams. I think you'd probably rather play New Orleans. That's all I'm saying. It doesn't mean you're going to win the game.
I mean, New Orleans looked better than the Seahawks did in week one. I don't think they're as good, but they took Arizona down to the wire.
All right. 888, what do you guys think, 49er fans? Niners play the Saints on Sunday. Brock Purdy, should he play if he's not 100%? What do you, Jake Moody's been waived today if you're just joining us. Still don't know the status on Juwan Jennings. Coming up tonight, ladies and gentlemen, the Valkyries. They take on the Seattle Storm. You can hear the game right here on 95.7 The Game and on the Valkyries channel on the Odyssey app. Just download the app and search Valkyries. You can also watch the game on KPIX+. Pre-game starts at 6:30. That segment also brought to you by Cordelia RV Center.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.